All right, and welcome back to issue 17 of TLDR. I'm your friendly neighborhood backcracker, Dr. Joe, and with me, as always, is my hunk in crime, the Woodward, to my Bernstein, Friar, my man. How's it going?
I'm doing great, Doc. How are you feeling coming off of our latest interview that we had?
Oh, the Friar Side, the Friar, Jesus, here we go, right off the
rip. You're fine, just keep going, oh my God.
The Friar Side Chat, baby. We had a really good interview with Katana Collins. She is writing Batman, : The White Knight Presents, : Harley Quinn. So we had a really great interview with her that dropped today. And I also reviewed that book on Geeks Worldwide. That dropped today. So, and now we're live, so... Baby, we're having a day.
Yeah, that's damn straight. We're having a day. Yeah, and this is Doc's second review for Geeks Worldwide after joining officially 2 weeks ago after those rounds of comics came up. And the other one was Usagi Yojimbo was the first one that you did, and he'll be coming up again today. But I was happy to hand that one off to you, honestly, because I didn't realize it when you said like you were going to do it. I was like, Doc, if you want it, go for it, because obviously it's synergy for us. It's coming out at the same time we're talking to her. And then I looked at my list of what I have coming out, and I was like, oh, thank God Doc wants to do that one. Thank God. Because I have so many – I have two reviews that I still haven't done. I've gotten three out this week, one of them being Red Fork from TKO Studios, which I just because of scheduling last week with work and everything, I couldn't get to it. So, but Katana was outstanding. I mean, she was what a fun interview. You know, we've had some good ones so far. But I thought we got some great insight as to how she operates and how she's approaching the character. And it's been a fun series, as you noted. I think we've both given it the first two issues over a 9 or 9 plus rating, right?
Yep. I gave it a 9, and I believe you gave it a 9 on the first one as well. Yeah. And you can find that interview over on the Change My Mind podcast iTunes page. We've tweeted that out earlier today. But it was great talking to her because – She and Sean are bringing such great depth to that character.
Yes.
But she also just talked about, like you said, her writing process and how she's transitioned from a novelist into comics and the pros and cons of each. It was just a really fun interview and a little bit of humor in there as well. So we had a good time.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And that was one thing I noted because it was – one thing I thought was really interesting, well, a couple things where she talked about specifically what she's trying to explore with the character that I also wrote up for Geeks Worldwide in addition to your review in the episode. And as I'm writing, I was like, this is, we said it to her too. DC Black Label is like an indie brand within DC. It's like what Vertigo kind of was, but we're dealing with the characters that we love. And it's such an important, they may not see it, like Sean and Katana may not see it as they're doing it. And other writers, I think Tom Taylor has John Constantine, but I think that's so important for both DC and for Marvel, because if that brand is successful, then we're going to be able to see other artists and writers kind of mess around with these characters that we love in a different universe where they can kind of just mess around. Like it's not like there's no canon issues or whatever, you know?
Right. And I think it's a great opportunity for some of these young up and coming indie writers to get a shot at, I don't want to call it the big leagues, but you know, DC and Marvel, you know, they're the big leagues, right? Mm-hmm. And when doing some research for our interview with Katana earlier, we stumbled upon over the summer that DC had released a whole bunch of one-off Harley Quinn comics sort of leading into this. And we found out that Katana wrote one of those one-offs, but Mirka Andolfo also wrote one of those one-offs and a bunch of other familiar indie writers have done the same. So this could be a really great opportunity for those writers and those artists to sort of take their game to the next level and expand to a wider audience. And, you know, we love Black Label and we hope it continues because they're doing some really good shit over there.
Yeah, and speaking of Mirka Andolfo, I think I'm not certain yet, but I think Mercy's going to be the book that I haven't read it yet, but I think that's the one I'm going to want to do for our trade, which will be TLDR 20 coming up in a few weeks. But I like that one. The art, I have so much respect for her again for her being the artist on the book, like what Sean does, the artist on the book, and the writer, and I think she did the colors as well, right?
Which, she did everything. Colors, yeah. Letters, everything.
She did letters too. I forgot about that. But yeah. Sean doesn't do the colors, and I don't know who does the letters. But still, I mean, what he, the way he does it is very, very impressive as well. But like you said, that's one of the books that you reviewed this week. Also for What's New from DC, Red Hood 51 is out. I reviewed that. And it's like, it's a tough spot for, and I forgot to write down who the writer and the artist are, but it's, again, the reviews are on Geeks Worldwide, but it's a tough spot for them right now because you're coming in, you have Scott Lobdell just finished his run with the character, and however you feel about it, this team now comes in with issue 51 and 52, and I think that's it. I'm not seeing anywhere of a talk of a 53. I'm trying to make sure as I'm writing the review, I thought it was the end because we have Future State coming up. So right. It's a weird spot for them. I think that they could do something good with the character, but I just don't know that they're going to get a shot. Like, what is going to happen after Future State? And I have no idea the direction of Jason Todd. So it's tough for them to really accomplish what I think they want to. And like, I'll still read 52. I'm sure most fans will if they've stuck around this long, but you know, that one was whatever. John Constantine Hellblazer, the final issue of this run is out this week. I will have a review up for you guys on Wednesday, depending on when you're listening to this, because I've really enjoyed this run, and I think it's something that, you know, Doc, you should probably give a chance at some point. I don't know.
Oh, if definitely.
I mean, maybe I can do an episode on it. We'll see. We've already obviously talked John Constantine before, but it doesn't mean we can't do it again. And then rounding out my reviews, this one I actually have finished too. This was the first thing I think I reviewed from DC this week. Dark Knight's Death Metal, The Multiverse Who Laughs. Now, you read that review that I wrote, right, Doc?
I read your review. I haven't read the book, but seems like this one might be skippable.
This is they can't all be home runs. They can't all be home runs. And look, I'm not this person. Doc and I are both the same way. We're not gonna go and grade something like miserably low because this is something I still like. I just don't like it as much as everything else. And when we're talking about an event like this, I have said I think with pretty much every single one-off, it's awesome. Like, you got to read this one. You got to read that one. The Flash one I think was the only one that I was like, yeah, it's good, but I don't appreciate it as much because I'm not a Flash fan. Like, right. Okay, there's nothing you can do about that. But with this one, this is like the one issue I would say, like, there were chances to have some really good stories, and they didn't expand on enough. And then there are the ones that was like, you know, like the Patton Oswalt thing. I was like, I don't know if he's written stuff before, but I wasn't a huge fan of it. But anyways, that's enough DC. Doc, you have a Marvel book out, right?
Yeah, Daredevil 24. So this is one of the books stuck in purgatory at my local comic shop. So with it, you know, being the holiday week this week, I'll probably go up next week and have a good stack to pick up, but I can't wait to get my hands on this bad Larry.
And then you have Image, few things. You have actually one of the Image books that you have that you've talked about on this show in during Dorktober was Killadelphia. And I think we saw that the writer teased a script for the show or a movie or something, right?
Yep. So this has sort of been in the works for a little while. I think it's Killadelphia number 10 came out this week. It is a banger of an issue. Holy smokes. This is probably one of the more visceral issues. And there's been some doozies in there. But I think about halfway through the run, around issue 5, 6 or so, it was rumored that it was going to be optioned to HBO as a show.
HBO.
And this is going to make a fantastic show. And Rodney Barnes, he's got TV. He's got TV credentials. He's done stuff on the Wu-Tang Clan. I think he's done some stuff for Atlanta. So he knows his way around the TV world. So I'd expect this to be an absolute banger of a show.
Okay. Oh, okay. I mean, yeah. I was going to read it anyways, and I'm sure that the show is going to be good too. It sounded like a really good series, so I'm excited for this one. But even then, Doc, I don't know if that's the Image book you're most excited about right now.
The Image book that has really captured my attention is Department of Truth by James Tynan, and this was a difficult issue to read, and I don't know if it's, you know,
in the sense if
it's because I'm a parent and the issues that it talks about in this book, because it's sort of this is a book about conspiracy theories. In every issue, there's been a different conspiracy theory that they've honed into, and in this one, it was sort of reminiscent of the Sandy Hook you know, thing, and with
and
the conspiracy theory that were that there was child actors, you know, and it didn't really happen. So that's a topic that is just very tough in general. And
yeah, Jeez,
and this whole Alex Jones thing, right? I mean. That guy deserved. I'm not going to go there. But it was kind of hard to read, especially as a parent. But I think it's hard to read for everyone. Mm-hmm. And but it was still really fascinating. And as we all know, there's now two rules on this show. If it's Boom number one, you read it.
Right.
If it's Tynan number one, if it's Tynan period, you read it.
Ooh, that's,
I love that guy.
That's new. I knew that was your guy, but I didn't know that was a rule now.
It's so a it's a doc rule, right? So I mean, that's because I think we all have those writers where they come, you're going to grab it no matter what. And I think Tynan has reached that status with me as my binky. So,
understandable. But you know what, Doc? And that's the thing. Like I know with any form of literature, but specifically for our brand, like you deal with tough subjects sometimes, despite what people want to think, and you deal with tough subjects, and it's like, oh well, I don't like how they're portraying this or whatever. But maybe that's on purpose. Maybe that's to get some people to think where they normally wouldn't think about this stuff. Now it's like, okay, I'm reading it in a comic, and sometimes it's not as like that is the beauty of the X-Men. That's not only the book, but the show, which we've talked to the showrunner for the Change My Mind as well. Like that is what's so impressive about those things. It makes us think about that stuff more and think about it critically. And we don't even realize it. It's like you're watching the X-Men and it's fun and whatever. Whereas you get like real values from it. Although this is a little different because it's so eerie, but I wonder if you've convinced Keith to give it a shot yet. I know he will wait till the whole trade comes out or the first trade, but like this sounds like it's up his alley every time you bring it up.
Yeah. I mean, and like I said, the, conspiracy theories. I mean, to me, like there's all sorts of different conspiracy, like the moon landing being one, right? The JFK. But this one, I don't know. This one just seems so. This one is just so visceral, so real, so raw that it's sort of different than those other two. It's like, oh, the moon landing, ha ha ha. You know, it's like. But this one is just like, oh, and it was hard. It was hard, kind of flipping some of those pages. Not in a way that I was like, oh, I don't want to read this. Oh, it's cringe, and I can't do it. But it was just you read it, and there was, I'll say this time and time again, Tynan gets characters, and so there's real raw emotions in this particular book, and I can't recommend it enough. It's absolutely fantastic.
Well, I think I will end up reading it, but I mean, honest to God, Doc, like I said, I was backed up this week, and I'm looking at the list that we have right now. I have Spawn 312 out this week. Now, look, I really like the character. I really enjoy his look, and that has carried him so much for me. I can't say that about everybody, but I know it's important to people, the look of a character. That's right, give him a shot. I cannot believe how long it's carried this character where I care about him, because I'm not a huge, huge fan of the writing always. Like it's different from everybody else, but I don't like McFarlane's a genius in his own right, but I just like there are certain things with the story sometimes where it's like the pacing of it bugs me and the right. Yeah. I'm behind on that one more than anything, I would say right now. Undiscovered Country 10 is out this week. I will be having a review up for that one as well. Any more Image books for you?
So Nailbiter Returns number 7 came out this week. That continues to be a strong series. I talked about the original Nailbiter run during Dorktober. And then there was another number one that interests me. I picked it up. It's called Monstrous Talk Stories number 1. And this book's just not for me. It's not that it's a bad book. The art is actually gorgeous. But it was just, I don't know. It just wasn't for me. It was sort of a sad sack story that maybe because I had a lot going on this week and I had a ton of books to read this week, it just didn't capture my attention. And I was just kind of like, okay, the art's beautiful. When's this gonna? And it's only a two book. It's only a two parter, which is not bad. But for me, I don't think I'm going to pick up issue number 2, but the artwork was great. And it's not to say it's a bad book. Someone might pick this up.
Yeah, of course.
It's a beautiful story, but I wasn't in for the sad sack stuff.
Not everything is not everything's for, everybody. It's just the way it works.
But I took a flyer,
Yeah, hey, that's good. Sometimes you got to do, especially when you like the art and stuff. But boom, this week you had what? Two books?
Two books. So The Unkindness of Ravens, number 3, which again continues to be a strong series. It's starting to get a little, the mysteries are starting to deepen a little bit more, and it's a good story advancement issue. Which is great. I loved it. And Dune, House of Atreides, number 2, came out. So, you know, Dune is a universe that I am only vaguely familiar with. I picked up the book because it's supposed to be one of those sort of classic sci-fi books. So reading this...
it's an actual book, like the original version of it is as a... Okay.
It's an actual book. No pictures.
Right. So I like I told Katana in our interview, if there's no pictures, you know, there's like a 99% chance I'm not going to read.
Right. So I still read books without pictures. But this is a great series. Ooh. It's a good primer.
I'm a doctor. I'm so smart.
but so it's a great series. It's just a nice, you know, simple sci-fi story. So I'm looking forward to reading that, then jumping into the book, and then hopefully I can watch the movie when it's all said and done.
I'll still watch the movie when it's all said and done. I mean, now it makes more sense why there's so much hype around it. But everything that comes out is especially now, it's like it has to be a book first, whether it's a comic or an actual like a regular prose book. But you, what's this whole thing IDW had out this week with Usagi Yojimbo? Like, I saw it was Usagi Yojimbo 1, and wait, are they doing a like spinoff thing or whatever?
Yeah, so I was confused as hell. So the current run of Usagi Yojimbo, which I reviewed last week on Geeks Worldwide, is the first time in its 30-plus years that Usagi Yojimbo has been in color.
That issue specifically or that run?
That run. Okay. This run that's going on. But what they did to coincide with this is that they started to release some of the classic Usagi Yojimbo stories also in color. And they did that. That was like, I thought they were just going to kind of keep that going, but it stopped at issue 7 or 8, I believe. And I said, okay, there was a couple stories they wanted to, old stories they wanted to put in color. That was it. But this is the same thing. It's a classic stories, but also in color. So I'm like, oh, is this new? What's going on here? So I open it and read it. I go, oh, I've read this before. So, yep, that came out. So, I mean, I like that they're doing it because it's going to help introduce new readers to Usagi Yojimbo. Mm-hmm. So whereas I picked up with my review last week, sort of mid-run, this book is a book that you can pick up and you get a couple of classic Usagi Yojimbo stories without needing a lot of background filler. So, yeah.
So I asked Goo when we had him on Change My Mind this week if he was going to read The Last Ronin. Because for those who didn't hear that specific news dump from Mac and Goo, Goo spoiled the first issue of The Last Ronin. And I don't even tell you the spoiler, like what it addresses or anything. You can probably figure it out. But here's the thing I will say in fairness. I thought that Goo read it somewhere, like in an article, because they were spoiling it in the articles. Which, again, I never understand with reviews. Like, oh, it's news. Like, well, then at some point, if you continue to spoil stuff like that and solely just write that, then you are going to hurt that specific like industry, which will hurt your industry because they provide you with news. Yeah. Anyways, with Goo, he said he didn't read it anywhere. He just figured it out. I don't even want to say how he figured it out. Like I'll tell you off air, but okay. I don't want people to like, but he figured it out on his own without reading it or anything. So I guess Goostradamus is a real thing.
Yeah, it's got to be, or you know, Detective Goo, or you know, Goolock Holmes, or you know, we'll have to come up with some nifty Photoshop for him now.
Yeah, you'll get it. I think you'll understand how I figured it out when I explain. Like, it'll make more sense to you, but I can't say it specifically because I don't want fans to know. Anyways, I know you have Vault Autumnal 3 came out this week, but you have not read that yet, correct?
Yeah, I was. So I picked it up this morning. I haven't had a chance to read it yet. But I'm very much looking forward to, and as I was telling you before, I think this is a book I'm no longer going to talk about. I'm just going to mention that it's out each week so that when the time comes, I can sit down and do a full episode on it.
Okay. Breaking news. Okay. Brick is in the chat right now, and we appreciate you helping us out with this. There you go. Goo talked to somebody about it. That's how he found out. He lied to me. That rat bastard lied to me. I'm never going to trust him again. Friggin' goo. Unbelievable. The other thing that came out this week, Doc, is Dark Horse's Witcher : Fading Memories issue 1, which I have not picked up yet, but I am absolutely going to read. I have not read any Witcher stuff before. I loved the show. I didn't play the game either. And I'm going to give this a shot. Have you? Are you too?
I read it. It's fantastic. So okay. my experience with Witcher is solely through the video games. And then I started to watch the show, but the show, while I knew the characters were involved, the show kind of goes from A to Z in about the most ridiculous roundabout way, you know? And so I made a point. I bought the books again. I know, fucking pretentious doc over here reading books without pictures. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to sort of read the books because, a good friend, Bubbles Jordan Roy gave me a reading order. To do that. But anyway, so I've never read a Witcher comic. This came out this week. I said, I'm going to give it a go. The art is fantastic. It's got almost a sort of sketchy watercolor feel to it. And the colors are dark, but it's not like last week I read Sea of Sorrow. That was dark. This is just like they're using, you know, it's
dark tones, but it's not dark.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it's just, you know, You get Geralt, you get his fucking horse there. Whatever the fucking horse's name is,
I don't remember.
I can't remember. But it's just a good Witcher story, and it's a quick read. It's if you're a fan of the Witcher universe, then you're gonna like this book. It was absolutely fantastic, and it's not like you needed to know. Even if you had no idea what the Witcher was, you could read this book, and if you enjoy fantasy comics, you would enjoy this book.
Hmm. Okay. Well, it's good. I was already sold on it to begin with. Yeah. The show definitely helped that out. And now I'm definitely all in on it. Now
Roach,
you got
Roach. That's the horse's name. Roach.
Roach.
Yes.
Roach. Okay. Got it. Now,
not important, but
for some reason, I thought this book that you were going to talk about this week was a Dark Horse book. Now I know that Davey has read this. And is this, you'll tell me in a second, but I know Davey's read it. I believe Scheim has read it as well. So, I mean, if the three of you guys are reading it, I consider it a must read. Keith's really the only other one that I think reads comics anymore. I know Wes did a little bit as a kid. Goo can't read, and I don't think Mac can either. Rossi used to read comics. I don't know about Billy. I've never asked him. But anyways, so Doc, tell me a little bit about Chew.
So Chew, don't forget, Katana Collins also talked about this book in our Fireside Chat.
I mean, unbelievable, right?
Right. The serendipity we have.
Yeah, crazy.
So this was a book that was recommended to me by Dave over at Hub Comics. You know, what you know, you go into a comic shop enough and, you know, you talk to the guys behind the counter or gals behind the counter long enough, they get a sense of what you like, and mm-hmm. and they put their salesmanship hat on and are able to, you know, recommend books. And this is one of those books that he recommended to me. And actually the way he sold me was I was, you know, bit my books. He goes, have you ever heard of this? I said, nah. So he went over to like the dollar comic rack. He took the first issue. He gave it to me. And he said, this is yours. Take it. It's on the house. You know, and if you don't like it, you just bring it back. But if you do like it, I'll give you a discount on the first trade and then, you know, go from there. So went home, read it. Absolutely love it. And, you know, 12 trades later, you know, I've got the whole collection. So Chew
12 trades later?
Yeah, it's like 60 issues.
I didn't know that. I don't know why I didn't know that. Okay. So this has to be one of Image's bigger books.
Yeah, this is and at one point there was talks about optioning it to TV, but I don't think it ever took off. But Chew was written by John Layman, mm-hmm. The artwork Rob Gilroy, colorist Rob Gilroy, and the letterer John Layman. So it was pretty much a passion project for these two guys. And I love John Layman's writing, and I love Gilroy's art. And this is, I mean, I've talked about some Banana Land books on this show. This one is right up there, if not takes the cake.
Okay.
So Chew takes place in a world where chicken has been outlawed by a massive bird flu.
Get the fuck out of here. That's what it's about? Oh, yeah. My God. Yeah. I didn't know that. Davey didn't tell me that. I didn't. Oh, wow.
And so due to this, you know, the event of the bird flu, any and all forms of chicken are illegal. And anyone caught eating it, buying it, serving it faces like, it's just like chicken is like the cocaine, all right, of this world. So you're going to get arrested and you're going to get prosecuted. And there's a great little scene where the two characters are on a surveillance, you know, doing a stakeout. And he's like, oh, well, he's only got 11 wings on him. That's really just sort of a misdemeanor. We'll let him go. But that guy's got, you know, four breasts, three, you know, and like, that's the guy we're going to go after, you're sort of thing. So
it's a whole commentary on the drug world.
Well, yeah, but it's chicken and it's fucking bananas. And so,
jeez, is chicken and bananas or just chicken?
Yeah. You fucking. But anyway, so you know, black market chicken is in big demand, and so the FDA has become the most powerful agency in the world.
Okay.
Because chicken, right? Because chicken, right? It's the Food Drug Administration, right? So who's going to bring down Big Chicken? It's going to be the FDA, baby. So
okay.
So you know, like I said, this issue's you know, 60 issues long. I told you it was fucking crazy, Nick.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. I love it.
And so while I enjoy this book, this series, and the story a lot, 60 issues may have been a little long. Right. They probably could have shortened it a little bit. That's would be my only real critique of it.
What would you have preferred it to have been, like 20, 30?
Well, they probably could have been like 40.
Okay.
Maybe 50, like, you know, knock an entire trade off or whatever. But it's not like there was a ton of filler. I just feel like they could have gotten to the end, you know, a little bit quicker. But that's even then,
if you think it can be like an indie comic that can last 40 issues and be still good, like that's
oh, it's tremendous. Yeah. That's tremendous. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Gilroy's art is fantastic, and Layman's just got such a twisted sense of humor. And so this book, what's also great about it, is very punny, right? So the play on words with chicken and the jokes they make in the writing are hilarious. But what's also great is that every panel that you look at, you always want to check the art in the background, because there's always just these subtle little, you know, jokes and puns that are written on, like,
oh, I love boards that
in the background.
Oh, I love it when they do
all these little things, Nick.
So it's good.
It's absolutely fantastic. So the humor in this is great. The story is great, and it's just, it's nuts. And so the other big thing about this book, and it's, you know, and probably the main thing about it is that, you know, there's people in this world that have powers that are food based.
I'm sorry.
So
what?
Right. So,
like Condiment Man would actually be like a legitimate villain in this.
Well, yeah, yes and no.
Condiment
so your main,
King, whatever.
Right. Condiment King. Right. So your main character, Tony Chew, C-H-U.
But the book is C-H-E-W, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And it gets its name because Tony Chew has this this power. It's known as a cybopath, where if he takes a bite out of something, he gets an immediate history of that object that he eats. So if he takes a bite of a cow, if he eats like a hamburger, he knows that cow's entire history from when it was born to the moment it was, you know, thrown on the grill and put on his plate. But he also, if he takes a bite of a person, he knows that person's entire history. Mm. So Tony Chew is a police detective.
I have to take a bite, you're saying, right? Like, he has to physically, a lick doesn't count.
No. He's got to chew it, baby.
Okay.
So he's a cop for the Philadelphia Police Department. Right.
Yeah.
And so you can see how being a detective, a skill like this could be, you know, very handy. So the first book starts off him and his partner. They're like I was talking about a few moments ago. They're sort of on a surveillance case. And he incidentally gets some blood of, you know, someone they're chasing in his mouth, and he gets a history and he's able to solve the crime that they're searching.
So swallowing counts, too.
Oh yeah, he's got it. He's got yeah. It all counts.
He didn't say anything. He's swallowing in that case.
Yeah.
It.
Yep.
Got it.
So this leads to him getting a job at the FDA, and so this series is all about trying to discover the real mystery behind, you know, the bird flu, but also along the way trying to take down you know, various villains that come in their way. And so the main characters in this book, like I said, are Tony Chu, his partner Colby, Mason Savoy, who's an FDA agent who recruits Tony into the FDA. And then there's Amelia. She's another character with food power. She's a food critic. So she's Tony's love interest. And she is able to, so her power, I'm not going to name these powers because they're so, they're like tongue twisters to try and pronounce. And I already fuck up regular words, but her food ability is she can eat something. And then when she's writing out her review, she's able to describe it in such detail that anyone reading it can immediately taste what's written on the paper. So good and bad. So if it's a good review, right, people are, yeah, you know, but if it's a bad review and she's describing it in really, you know, very vividly, you see some people like in the art, like they're reading a review and the next panel, they're vomiting all over the place. Hmm. Right. So it's quirky like that. Cause you, there's all these, as you read the books, there's just all these absolutely insane, like who the fuck would think about that? You know, yeah, kind of powers, right? So I wrote down a list of some of these abilities, other food-related abilities. And so you come, you know, there's someone who's
like, honestly, if there was ever a book that Max should read, it sounds like this would be.
Well, it's a lot of bone in ribeye, so I don't know if you like it.
Oh, geez. Oh, yeah. It's going to trigger him. We all know that.
Right. So, you know, so some of the abilities are, you know, there's someone that can whittle chocolate into weaponry. Only chocolate, no other food. It has to be chocolate. They can turn chocolate into knives, into working guns, all sorts of things.
Okay.
Right. There's people that can get smarter, like super intellect from eating food or super strength from eating, you know, certain food. The ability to control people's mind, you know, with food. There's a food pornographer ability.
What is that?
So someone has the ability to take pictures of food and elicit an erotic response. So I could draw you an eggplant and you might pop a boner.
Oh.
Right? Right?
Okay.
So this is the most out there book, but it's so fun. The writing is excellent. I know.
You've had some out there books too, man. This does sound like the weirdest one though yet.
Yeah. And but it's fun, but it's exciting. There's action. It does get gory is not the right word, but you can get a little like at times. But not jarring, just a little like I didn't expect that kind of thing. You know, nothing that's gonna make Doc have to close the book and come back to and read it at daytime.
Were there any pop up moments? We know you're big into that now,
right? Well, only with the erotic novels, you know. Okay.
Well, I mean, there is the pornographer, right, in this. So
yeah, but no, there's some sex. There's some sex in this book. You know,
we're gonna start turning into PCP, where everybody starts taking their tops off.
Right,
did you hear about that? Emerson was on.
Oh, I saw it. Yeah. Like that, right?
Right away.
I was able to catch the first five. He popped his top quicker than you. He didn't even have to ask him. You know, yeah, they go right to him. He's just taking his shirt off. Right,
I would like the record to show that the initial time that I did it, I was bullied into it. The second time I did it, I was asked to do it by Billy, which was still a little uncomfortable. I don't understand why he wants me to do that. But again, it's like, this is not – Emerson's volunteering it. I am just like –
you're being bullied.
Like
it's not –
I feel like I'm a piece of meat, you know, which is perfect for what we're talking about today. Right.
And that's part of the reason why I picked this book for this week, because with Thanksgiving being tomorrow, or when you're watching or listening to it this week, it just the irony was delicious. As
so, this isn't a Thanksgiving themed book. It's just
It's a food book. But the twists and turns that the book takes, and just again, even though it's an out there concept, it's really fun to read. You know, the writing is excellent. The artwork is excellent, and I will recommend this book to anyone, because, you know, part of the reason why we've talked about why we love indie comics so much. This new time, Nick's got me all kerfluffled. Why we love indie comic books so much is that, you know, they're not, you got to break away from the superheroes every now and then. And indie books will take you in a zillion different directions. And this one takes me in a direction I never thought I never would have come up with this, you know, this fucking idea.
I can't believe it. I can't believe anybody did, to be frank. This sounds so bizarre.
It's great. It's brilliant. And here, I'll hold the book up here. This is the first trade. Okay. So there's your protagonist there, Tony Chu. And you can't see there, but in his hand, this is describing it for the listeners. In his hand is a human thumb. So at one point, his boss at the FDA forces him to eat the thumb so they can solve the case. Even though the guy already has all the answers he needs, he likes to watch Tony squirm.
That sounds absolutely delightful. And by the way, you did mention the new time. For those who are listening to us on the Change My Mind audio channel, whichever one you guys end up using, we have changed our broadcast time, our live stream time, to the middle of Wednesday afternoon, like right around 1:30, depending on the day, because of my work issues. And you know what? Doc and I are both home because of the pandemic. So it's like it works for us. So if you guys are looking for a distraction on your Wednesdays, we'll be here for you all the time going forward. Also, the holiday is on Thursday this week. But outside of that, Doc, I mean, I think this is something that I'm interested in, knowing that, Davey and Scheim had already read it beforehand, too. I was like, okay, I think this is going to be one I'll give a shot to no matter what. But I'll tell you what, man, it does. Like, this sounds very, very weird. And I get the whole, like, chicken and how it's like cocaine or a drug and all that kind of stuff. Are there any other themes going into it that you feel like they hit on well or at all, or would it spoil anything?
Well, yeah, I don't want to spoil it too much. It definitely gets very sci-fi at points, but the weirdness, you read this book for the weirdness. I mean, that's what's so great about it, because it's going to be different than anything else you're reading. Hands down, you're not going to read anything else, you know, like this. And it's weird, it's funny, it's like I said, you want to look at every panel, you want to study every panel, because there's just jokes everywhere. They just hide jokes everywhere.
I like that.
Whether it's on a coffee mug or a bulletin board or a memo.
So you feel like you're entrenched in this world?
Very much so. And for it being 60 issues, I mean, you do fly through it, because it's just that off the wall. You want to see where it goes. Now, there will be a couple of times you're like, okay, they could have maybe cut this out, or they maybe could have cut that out and gotten to this point a little bit faster. But those are small critiques overall. So what I would say, Nick, is that at some point in the near future, you know, because you've got a couple of books you want to lend me, I will let you borrow, trade one of Chu, and you can also pick up.
Oh, what a guy you are. Look at that. That is as good. That is what a guy.
So for those of you listening at home, this is what we call a transition. And I went through my comics. I've got this bin of comics that I've had since I was 10. And going through, I remembered seeing a Moon Knight book. So I told Nick he could have it. I rummaged it out, and it turns out that it's Moon Knight number one.
Yeah. And so, I said, Doc, it's number one. I mean, like, I don't know if Moon Knight's, it's not as much as like an Iron Man one or Action Comics one or whatever, but it's like, it's still a one. Like, you don't need to give it to me. You didn't know. And
yeah, no,
the guy he is.
It's you're talking Moon Knight this week. Again, we talk about serendipity. And
it's unbelievable.
It's all yours, my man.
I gotta say, Doc, that I was gonna say it after the show off air, but that may have been the best transition we've ever had in the Dork Shared Goo universe. That was quite impressive, even though for our audio listeners, maybe they couldn't appreciate it as much. But this week, the characters that I care about most, Doc has not read as much. Like John Constantine, Gambit, Moon Knight is one of them, in Red Hood. So, you know, we've talked about all of those guys. I'm sure we'll talk about some of them again some point down the line. But Moon Knight, there's been quite a bit of his stuff over the years. And this is a character who I fell in love with because of Contest of Champions. I saw his look, and it was at that time, because, like, right, just generally speaking, he wears all white. But in the Contest of Champions, he has black spandex and then white armor and then the white cape. And he's got that crest moon on his chest, like the one that I'm wearing today. And I got to give this guy a chance and learn more about him. And I'm sure some people have seen that he's like Batman for Marvel. He's like the copy version of it. And yeah, that happens with Marvel and DC quite a bit. I'm pretty sure Marvel usually takes from DC usually, but either way, it's been, you know, flip flopping and all that stuff through the years. But I'm reading, I found some different stuff to read, and I was like, okay, what's the best one that I read from Moon Knight? Because there's like a Marvel, what was the Gambit version that I did? It was Marvel Unlimited, I think it was, that run. There was there's a Moon Knight version of that. There was some Moon Knight stuff from the past few years where they kind of picked up with the main continuity. And there was some other stuff from the aughts that I really liked. Actually, that run, if you're looking for like a longer version of it, like outside of the one I'm going to talk about today, that was by, I wrote it down, that run was by Charlie Houston and Mike Benson. Benson took over from like the middle of the second trade all the way through the end of the fifth. And I really enjoyed that one. The first trade, though, like if you look up Moon Knight and you see artwork of him or drawings of him, you're going to see David Finch and Danny Mickey's drawings of the character. Mickey is the inker in that case. And that is like my Moon Knight in terms of looks, 1,000%. But in terms of a story, and this one's only 14 issues long, so it kind of works out perfectly. I'm going with Moon Knight from 2016, and that's issues one through 14. It's not anything crazy, because I think it goes up to 200 or whatever in the main line. And this was written by one of your guys, Jeff Lemire. The artist on this is Greg Smallwood. Colors by Jordi Belair, who's done all the recent John Constantine Hellblazer colors, and he's done an outstanding job with that. And he did an outstanding job here as well. And then letterer is Corey Petit. I don't know if it's Petit or Pettit, but either way, he does it. I mean, there's only so many letterers out there, and he's one of the ones that I see constantly and stuff. So you don't know much about Moon Knight, like at all, right?
Zilch.
Okay.
All I know is that Disney Plus is eventually, or they've indicated they're going to do a show.
Okay. Moon Knight. Right, exactly. So with Moon Knight, of the characters, like of all the books that I have, the most stuff I have is Red Hood. After that, it's probably Moon Knight. I mean, I have a lot of Gambit, and maybe it's him, but then I have a lot of Constantine. I have quite a bit of Deathstroke, but there's only so much of him. But I think I have more Moon Knight than I have anything else. And I know that everybody, when they see the Keanu rumors, is like, oh, this is awesome, it's awesome. And at first, I was like, oh yeah, that'd be great. It'd be cool because it's a Keanu, like natural reaction. Yeah, who doesn't want to see Keanu in something? Because he's a good dude. He's always having, his movies are always kind of fun. Not always, but you get my point.
Yeah.
And it's coming off John Wick. But as I thought about it more, it's like, well, wait a second. I know what Mark Spector's like. I know what Moon Knight's like. And I don't think that Keanu can do that character justice. Yeah, will the average person still like him? Yeah. But I think that the character that Moon Knight, that Mark Spector actually is, can be more interesting. And that's why when like Shia LaBeouf came up, I was like, okay, I can work with this. That's why when Oscar Isaac came up, I was like, well, maybe. Like, I don't hate it because I think that he has more range than Keanu Reeves might. Like, he's like, Keanu's the same person all the time. And I don't hate that necessarily, but for a character that I know is more dynamic, and with Moon Knight, he is bat. You talk about crazy shit before with Chu. Moon Knight is batshit crazy. He's dealing with multiple personalities. So you have Mark Spector, you have Jake Lockley, and I always forget the character, the other personality, Grant. I forget his first name, and I wrote it down somewhere on here. Why can't I find it? Stephen Grant. Thank you very much. And then he's dealing with those characters in his head. And then he has Khonshu, which is this ancient Egyptian god that had brought him back from the dead. Maybe even in that very first issue of Moon Knight, it's like along those lines, and he's got that voice going on in his head all the time, and especially in this Lemire run that you guys will read. And what's so good about this one, and another thing too, like Moon Knight has had powers over the years, he doesn't anymore. Then that's where it's kind of like he's like Batman, but he's not nearly as organized as Batman. He's definitely more of a brawler. There are times where he's, like there's a Mr. Knight look that he has where he's dressed in like a three-piece suit without the blazer. Yeah. And it's just the vest, I guess. And then the mask all white, it's really cool, but like he's probably more calculated there. But anyways, with this run specifically, I have to go back and read. I did not go back and read it ahead of this. I skimmed through it because I remember most of it, but I do remember the biggest thing for this was after I read, I was like, wait a minute, what the fuck just happened? Because like it's got that Shutter Island ending to it. Where I'm like, wait, huh? like so many times it's confusing throughout all this. I don't know what's real. And I hope if I go back and read it, I'll be able to figure it out. But to me, that's the most fun you're going to have with something. Cause he's in we think he's in an insane asylum here, but is he, or is there more at play? Because Conscious gotcha. Constantly fucking with his head. And like, what does that mean for what's going on? Like if it's not, like it just, there's so many questions that pop up. And that, I mean, honestly, to me, that's the best type of story. That's asking, making you ask yourself questions over right. and over again, because it's like, I need to figure this shit out. Like what's going on? And I remember after reading it at the time, I was like, oh, that's freaking frustrating. I have no idea what just happened. Like I do, but I don't. And it's like, oh, what the fuck? So I thought it was really good. I thought Lemire did a great job with it. Now, again, as I expressed before, my like Moon Knight, is David Finch and Danny Mickey's drawing of the character. I still like the art in this. It's pretty gritty. And I think they do a good job of, you know, Moon Knight's Mark Spector sees he sees the real world and he kind of sees this one that's not so much, or maybe that is the real world and the other one's not so much. And I think that they do a good job with the artwork of kind of bouncing back and forth between the two. And I think most people will probably read it and look at it and say, well, Nick, it's obviously this, but again, we're dealing with comics and it's like fantastical shit. And this guy is supposedly, right. you know, he's brought back from the dead. Like that is the thing. So this God Khonshu can do whatever the fuck he wants, apparently. So like, that's where it's just ridiculous. So I really enjoyed it.
So what kind of story is this? Is it a mystery story? Is it an origin story? What is sort of the overall, like in this first trade, you know, what is it that's really going on? Is it just him in a sane asylum, or you think, and musings of Moon Knight, or is there something at play going on?
So this is the character, I forget when that first issue came out, but that character came out years ago. And this, like the thing you need to know about Moon Knight going into this series, because if you just pick it up and you don't know anything about him, it can be a little bit confusing. So I will tell, these are non-spoiler things necessarily, but non-spoiler. There are characters that you're going to see pop up at one point that are kind of like allies to Moon Knight. I won't go through the names because for those who are familiar with the characters, maybe, you know, you'll want to wait, but you'll see them pop up. Just know that those characters are people that he's kind of cared about or been close to, been through some shit with over the years. And you wouldn't necessarily expect him to see them in the place that he's in right now, which is part of what makes this whole thing so friggin' weird. So no, Doc, it's not an origin story. You need to know a little bit about the character. You know that he's dealing with multiple personalities, and that's why I like this so much. Like in Houston's in Benson's run, I feel like I have to go back and read it, but it's been a while. I feel like they, with the character, delved into that a little bit. But it wasn't like the driving force necessarily as much. There was a battle between, I think he had just been broken at one point. Batman in dealing with getting back in the game or not and getting powers. I mean, I think losing his powers maybe, because again, he did have some at some point. For this though, it is so much focused on him dealing with not knowing what's real and what's not. And now he's gone from like multiple personality disorder to hallucinating and not knowing what the heck's going on. Like if this is an exercise in his head, if he's seeing fake shit in front of him, like he doesn't know if it's a dream or not. So like So it's not, obviously it's not like a Black Label where it's like this offshoot thing, but it's only 14 issues long. It's, you know, it starts off with Moon Knight 1 and goes till 14. So I guess you kind of look at it as like his own independent thing, but I don't think it's like this doesn't happen for the character in his main continuity, if you know what I'm saying.
Gotcha. Now with the multiple personalities, are these just voices he hears in his head, or are there physical manifestations to these multiple personalities? So when he's one guy, often does he sort of bounce between personalities, and will he dress differently? Obviously, he'll act differently.
Right.
Are there different powers? Are there any powers associated with some of these personalities and not others?
There are no powers with those personalities at all. Yeah. It's just having Khonshu in his head for years was one of the things that created a problem for him. Yeah. But I think he developed the multiple personalities fairly early on, but the character did not have that right away. But with Lockley. Lockley is like a taxi cab driver who's like a tough guy, and then Grant is like a movie or TV producer. So they have three, you know, two very different individuals from what Mark Spector is, who was a former mercenary. That's why when we talked about Winter Soldier and Changed My Mind, and they brought up like how, oh, maybe they're alluding to Moon Knight, and West found that online. I was like, no, I'd be shocked if that's what it was. If like Moon Knight is now some anchor in Cairo, because Mark Spector is like an American. So yeah. I mean, they could change that. I don't care. Like, I mean, but there are just some things, like if you're going to turn them to a TV anchor, I don't know. I mean, like DC, I mean, Marvel gets stuff right most of the time when it comes to their shows and their movies. So,
right.
But yeah, so no, there's no power associated. And there are times, I don't know about in this run, but in general, you see times where Mark Spector talks to Lockley, talks to Grant, and talks to like a Moon Knight Khonshu kind of like Fist of Khonshu kind of thing in his mind. And it'll be the four of them. And I think we do see that in this run.
Gotcha. Oh, cool. I've never read Moon Knight. I didn't even know the character existed until Disney Plus announced that there's talks of them doing a Moon Knight show. So then I, you know, did a little bit of research, but not much. So this with it being Lemire and with it coming from, you know, praise from you, this is one I'll definitely have to. I found it on the Hoopla app, so I got it downloaded and ready to go. So I'll definitely read it. Yeah.
This is how much Moon Knight I have. And I'm missing one of the trades because it's hardcover and I have it in a different stack. And then there are other issues of Moon Knight that I have somewhere else, but I just grabbed the because I collected all. I didn't get the trades for this one. I got just the single issues. And on top of that, too, like I think I tweeted it out before the show, but one of the greatest gifts I've ever gotten from an ex was this flask, and it is old Moon Knight comics, like an old strip. Yeah.
And it's now you're gonna place an object over a child.
Yeah, I don't have a kid. rumors over here. I'm not Billy D who has to wear that dork dad ? Shirt. Yeah, that's not me. That was a
sharp looking flask though. I mean, who knew? Like,
yeah, I think it was on Etsy.
I mean, I was out of comics for a long time, but still, you know, kept up to date. I still knew, you know, the comings and goings. I just wasn't reading as voraciously as I am now, and as I had in the past. But Moon Knight was just completely not even anywhere on my radar.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And I think for me, he wasn't on my radar until Contest of Champions. He really wasn't. So it's like when that game, like when they won, people wonder where we, you know, how we get into back into comics or get into characters. Like sometimes it's just a game. It's just a little thing. So yeah, I'd recommend, I think Moon Knight is, and look, if you guys want to get to know the character better ahead of the show, the only little thing that, like I said, is you have to know that he has multiple personalities. And I think everybody knows that at this point. And then that some of the characters in this story specifically are ones that he's dealt with throughout his time. So it's not like these random strangers. You'll know which characters I'm talking about when they pop up. And outside of that, like, I think this is a good encapsulation of what the character is and what I'm hoping Disney Plus can kind of do, but it's tough because this is, like I said, it's wild. So I don't know if Disney Plus will feel comfortable doing that. So we'll see. But anyways, so that's all, everything that we have outside of the fact that you backstabbed me in Among Us this week.
No one was going to suspect, you know, that Tio would take out his quarterback, right? So,
yeah, unbelievable.
I am fucking terrible at this game because my timing couldn't be worse. I'm sitting, I'm kind of walking around. I come back into the room. Oh, there's Fryer. He's by himself. Boom, I kill him. No one's around. I'm thinking, oh, I should probably vent out of here because it's a popular room. People are going to come in. So I go to vent out. Who's fucking standing there looking me dead in the eye? Fucking Shime.
Unbelievable.
But Shime, thankfully, you know, held the secret until I pulled another fucking bonehead move that got me caught. So I stick at the game, but it's a lot of fun. I love playing with you guys.
And, yeah. Hopefully we get to – Shime wants to get some more games in with everybody in the DSG, but that would require everybody besides. Like, it's right now it's been us two with Shime. Mac was playing with us.
Keith's played a couple of times. Davey played once.
Yep. Okay, so we got some good participation. I don't know if Goo's capable of doing that stuff. Billy said he wants to play. Wes will. I guarantee Wes will. He'll say he wants to, and then it just will never ever happen. Which, by the way, did you hear him taking shots at you?
What the fuck? He's coming after me, telling me I need to be knocked down a peg or two because I'm doing two podcasts now. Coming from a gentleman who I believe has two podcasts.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
I mean.
I hate to
Doc and Nick are coming in hot, baby. We're taking the DSG by storm. You know, it's.
I love you both, and it really kills me to see that the Change My Mind channel is in disarray.
We're all good. A couple of beers, and we'll be all good.
Yeah, it's going to take the beers though, because it's really getting tense right now. It's unbelievable. But anyways, yeah, you and Billy D got your show. You guys are normally going to be doing that on Thursdays going forward. We are permanently, somewhat permanently switching over to Wednesday afternoons with TLDR. You guys are going to be doing that tonight, Wednesday night at 8, right? I've heard it both ways.
Yeah, I heard both ways will be tonight at 8 o'clock because, you know, Thanksgiving this week. But normally going forward will be Thursday nights, 8 or 8:30. That'll be week dependent, I think. But I'm very excited for that. And then after that, I'll be streaming some Call of Duty Cold War. Nice. So that'll be probably around 9-ish. And busy week, baby.
Yes, and it is, of course, Movember, so make sure you guys are checking out Davey's Movember page, which he has shared on his profile. I hope it's pinned at the top. I believe it is. Yeah. I know everybody's been sharing it. Doc's involved in it, too. I donated to Doc, which goes right to Davey as well, because that's what it's all about. He's just helping Davey out with his cause. So make sure you guys donate to, I would say, donate to Doc's page so it goes to Davey, but either way, it goes to the same place in the end. And other than that, Doc, just a reminder for everybody, if you haven't listened to the Katana Collins interview, again, she's the writer for Batman : White Knight Presents Harley Quinn. And she was, really had a good time talking with her, and hopefully we get to check in with her, somewhere down the line.
That'd be great.
Yep. All right. Until next week, Doc, then have a happy Thanksgiving and stay sexy.
You know it, baby.